Two Queer Arabs is a podcast that focuses on what it means to be queer, Arab, political, and finds comedy in all the seriousness.
Your art is so personal and political. I understand you want to maintain a professional and, boundary.
Listen,
but your work,
if she wanted to be professional, she wouldn't be on our fucking podcast right now, right?
Your work,
she'd be taking her head and lifting it high somewhere else.
Your work is deeply personal, embedded in the political, and the aesthetic of like performance as reality and as existential and extraterrestrial.
So I don't want to get too much into her work before I actually introduce to our listeners who we're talking to. I hope
this is called a cold open. We just do cold open sometimes.
Listen, if you're curious who this person is that Jude and I are talking shit with, it is Dina Aladib. She is a visual artist and she is a good friend to us both. The last time the three of us were in the same physical space was New York City. Dina was pregnant with her child. We were in the East Village. I remember it so vividly. It was the last time all three of us were in the same space. And here we are in a virtual space together.
You would, Aisha, you would send her hanging out with someone giving birth. I mean, you didn't send her.
She wasn't giving birth. She was pregnant. Did I just say she was
soon to give birth?
She was pregnant. She was unhappy about the final parts of her pregnancy. And we went to an Indian restaurant in the East Village, I remember, because Dina never left the East Village. So you had to meet her in the East Village.
Once I tried
to get her to come to the West Village, she was like 3 hours late because she got lost from the East Village to the West Village. It's a grid.
But you know, this is not just me. This is like everyone who fucking lives in Manhattan. They don't leave their fucking neighborhood. Like, it's like, you know, like, it's good that I left. Actually, I lived in Alphabet City and I met you in East Village.
My bad.
No.
But that was the last time the three of us were together. So this is, for me, it's a really special show because this is really three friends talking shit. But also, to have Dina on this show, she's such a brilliant international artist who has shown and worked around the world, primarily in the Arab world. And I'm just so excited that she's come on the show, that we can center her work and whatever, you know, we throw at her that can embarrass her. So thank you, Dina, for coming on our show.
Well, I love you both. I am honored to be here. I'm grateful that you guys are doing this because this is so, so, so critical. We need this. We need more of this. This being, you know, queer, Arab, radical, fierce, super like critical and creative, and get the kind of intersectionality of all the details and nuances of our beings. So you clearly
don't listen to our podcast.
Yeah, right? I don't think she's
doing here.
And at the same time, like,
probably all the shit I talk about the episodes and like our podcast, I'm like, oh, it's so fucking brilliant.
Yeah, but you do it in a fun, playful way. It doesn't have to be all like so fucking like professionally serious. I mean, it's serious. I think it's serious, but it's like fun. You know, it doesn't have to be like professional in that like quote unquote like professional way. It's like, you know, it's the way it should be. I think this is why we all get together and we're like, we're kin because we get the depths, but we also need kind of the fierce playfulness to survive. Cause I think it's a form of survival. I don't think it's just like, you know, being like loosey-goosey. I think it's a way of surviving.
You're right. We put the fun in topics like breast cancer.
Right.
Dina, actually,
very serious work, actually. Dina is very serious.
It's not just visual. I actually want to, don't limit her like that. My focus, the questions I have is I want to talk more about your performance pieces because those are the most compelling to me, which is actually surprising because I think most performance art is trash. And if it's not trash, it's like so hyper aware. Everyone trying to be like Andy Warhol, you can't do it, you know? And I just think, yeah, like I want to hear more about not only the process, but like how it is that you apply the politics in to the performance, especially since with performance art, a lot is, well, it requires patience, you know? So tell me how you do it. You know, we ask a lot about like process and like, I guess it's a process question, but then also two-part questions. I like to do that. Like what moves you to do like that piece or just like other pieces. And yeah, that's about it.
Yeah. I think it's something that you said earlier on. I think for me, that personal is political, you know, and vice versa. So, I mean, I'll just start with saying, I think it's my lived experience. I don't think, you know, this is something that I started doing because I'm, you know, just an artist, or I'm just a scholar, or just a writer, or just this or that. I think, you know, my lived experience as a child, you know, living in Iraq and being deported from Iraq and moving to Kuwait and then going through the, you know, Iraq invasion of Kuwait and then the first Gulf War, coming to the U.S., like in the middle of the Gulf War, like all these like moments really defined defined who I am. So, you know, like, because it's not just like a theoretical thing that I went to college and all of a sudden I was like, oh yeah, personal is political. It's like, dude, my life since I was like 5 years old has been, you know, defined by, you know, massive political realities that are not just about Iraq, but, you know, it's about kind of, you know, obviously empire, US empire, capitalism, all those things we can talk about later. We don't want to get into all that. But the point is like just process. I feel like those moments have really shaped who I am. And I think I've used different mediums as ways to deal with those. So, I mean, you know, I wanted to be an artist. I remember when, you know, when I was applying for college, but, you know, I had just moved to the US and, you know, didn't have money. And, you know, it was like art was like, you know, at the time looking at art schools was like so pathetic because there was no concept of the political, right? Everything was so anti-political at the time. You know, this is like, I'm talking about 1992, right? So like art schools, I mean, still, art schools are still like that, but at least there's some movement towards something different now. But at the time, you know, art schools were like so anti-political. So it didn't make any sense for me to do that. So I ended up doing international relations at Central States because it was like, you know, very radical at the time. And anyways, and then it became part of like, started working with organizations like what became now known as ANSWER, which was the International Action Committee. And, you know, as an anti-war organizer before like anyone was doing shit, you know, and so on and so forth. And I did that for like many years. And anyway, and then I went to grad school because of that, not because I wanted to go to grad school, but I felt like I needed to develop as an organizer. I felt like the limitations of, you know, theory and needing to have some long-term plans around how do you reach as many people as possible. Cause I knew like when I'm 80 years old, I'm not going to be able to organize the same way. My body ain't going to work, you know? So I did that because of, you know, because of that reason, same reason. And it was during the Gulf War, the second Gulf War and invasion. And I was just so, you know, destroyed after, you know, organizing over 200,000 people and, you know, and working for so many years and felt like, and then it crashed. The anti-war movement crashed after the invasion happened. I just felt so demoralized. So I went to grad school. Anyway, so I can go on, but my whole point is like all, you know, every single thing I've done, I think it just really stems from a personal political place. And I've used, whether it's anti-war organizing or my master's or my PhD or my writing right now, working on a book, or my performance art. And there are different ways of dealing with it. You know, my performance art is one that's about embodiment and about a very kind of visceral way of understanding these things, right? Versus my writing and my academic work is one that's very intellectual and very like, you know, theory heavy. And my organizing, obviously, that's about like community and building power and, you know, building movement. So I think each one is an expression of the same root, you know. Anyways, I can go on for it, but that's kind of the gist of it.
So, I mean, we could clearly talk to you for days about your trajectory and your work. And I think anyone who sees Dina's work realizes there's something much deeper going on. It almost seems like a therapeutic process for you to express this. I'm wondering if, because we've talked to other guests around how dealing with our trauma through different artistic expressions. Mm-hmm. For some people, it takes from them. So I'm wondering for you, is it something that helps you through the process, or is it something that takes from you? Like after you're done with the performance, do you feel emotionally and physically drained? Do you feel fed? Like, how does this affect you? Because your personal is very political, but sometimes, and I think in your case, some people don't have a choice to not be political because of their identity. And that's, it's just fucking sucks that they don't get that separation because of where they come from and the political situation they come from. And Palestinians, this is their existence, right? They're always politicized people. You are a politicized person by your identity and where you come from. And you use this in your work, but I'm wondering how that is for you as well as the person behind the political, who's expressing it in these various ways, artistic ways, how that kind of, what does that do for you, you know, yeah. outside of knowing that you're sharing this for other people?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to say something about something you said, the framing, and I'd love to have a conversation maybe separately at some point about this, but I always wonder about, you know, is it a burden and is it an issue of identity? Because I feel people who like think that they're, you know, that they're, you know, kind of a bit devoid of the identity and therefore can work on just the art or you know, and not deal with the political. I feel like that's, you know, and again, I'd love to have more in-depth conversation. I feel like it's like a false kind of notion. I feel like actually that is very political, right? Like when, you know, if someone who, you know, let's say from California, white, very privileged, never had to really struggle with any kind of supposedly outside burdens, I feel, you know, by making decisions to do art or writing or whatever that are apolitical, that is a political, that is political in the sense that, you know, it's the, you know, they think of it as apolitical, but it is political. It's very, because I don't feel like any of us are outside of the political reality or right. because the political reality is what, you know, it's like our context. Yeah. It's not even like about like therapeutic. I don't know if I even get to the therapeutic. I think it's definitely about survival, you know, it's really, it's like a survival strategy, you know? And I think some of it can be therapeutic. I think, yeah, my art can be therapeutic. I think coping my writing mechanism. Yeah, it's definitely a coping mechanism. It's like a, I guess it's a form of release. It's a way of like, yeah, engaging different parts. I feel like my writing and my scholarship is the part that's draining. Yeah. So that's where I get like drained and feel like beaten up and feel like frustrated. I feel
my art. But do you feel that because of what, just the nature of writing or the content of what you're writing?
No, I feel like it's the nature of writing, but I also think that the limitations of scholarship, because and this is why I'm an artist, right? Because a lot of these things that we're, you know, that we're dealing with, or I'm dealing with in my art, is issues of, you know, lived experience and embodiment that I feel like there's a limitation to writing and kind of, you know, cerebral and intellectual and theoretical work. That could not fully convey. And I think that's why people become artists. And this is why I do art, because I feel like I need both to make sense of things. I feel like art without having to do, you know, the deep kind of intellectual work is limiting, and vice versa. I feel like each one does its own thing. And I think they're related. They're interdependent. I don't think it's this or that. I think for me, and this is why I do all these things, because they're all like so linked, right? Each one.
But you realize that not a lot of artists are in academia and not a lot of academics are artists. So what you're doing and how you're understanding the nature of all of these different crafts that you're kind of building into the work that you're doing is a very specialized way of doing this work. And, you know, you and I met through our artistic work way back right. in the Bay Area, back in the day. But we both also transitioned into academia much later than one, traditional academics right. and PhDs, but also right. much later than our artistic kind of personas existed. Right. Like, so I think that for me has always been something that I've always connected with you on, because yeah, neither of us definitely. See ourselves as academics. We see ourselves as using academia in the right. way to tell these stories and use art in that work. But right. I just want to reiterate to you and remind you, that's not typical. Like what you're doing, you're wearing more than one hat to get your message out in as many ways possible. I see, for me, I see that as a form of activism. Like, yeah. I see what you're doing is a form of activism in your art and in your academia. Just different ways to express your cause, your issue, your grievance, and also your hopes.
Yeah, and I think there are challenges. I mean, there are limitations, because I do feel like when I, you know, now I think I'm doing more activism, like more activism versus before I felt like I was more of an organizer, right? Before I started grad school. And I feel like that's where the most impact happens as an organizer, as a community organizer, as an anti-war, you know, organizer, doing stuff around racial, just like when I was in movement work, basically, I feel like that's where the real work was happening. And I feel like that's where the impact was. This is where I felt at my best, to be honest. But I don't know. I feel like I realized that I could not potentially do this for the rest of my life. And I also felt like I was really, you know, kind of devastated after the second Gulf War and didn't have the energy to continue going the way I was going. So I feel like, you know, I think it's also important to say that I think all this is rooted in movement work, which is even more important than just the interrelationship between art and scholarship, right? Which for me, like the base of this is actually movement work. And that's where my heart and soul is. And so, yeah, I think that's also something we also related to each other, right? Like, you were in Palestine at the time, you know, on the streets, and you had just come back from Palestine when we met. So it wasn't just because of I think we connected because of our practice, but I think it's we connected because of our practice being rooted in political struggle, right? And I was, you know, organizing here in the Bay Area, but you were in Palestine, you know, on the streets, like, you know, at like facing tanks and soldiers and. So I feel like that really what also connected us, right? So I think, yeah, the intersection of like movement work, activism, the arts, and scholarship. So I think like we have that definitely in common.
The whole time as you were speaking, I was just thinking about how it like that you use academia and scholarship in your art, and a lot of people don't do that. So I really like how you express in that medium. And that's actually what that's what I thought was also interesting watching the performance art, is that you contextualize it and you politicize it. So
yeah, I'm curious, did you see the last performance, the one 2 days ago, the one I'm still recovering from? Did you guys see that?
I didn't
see it, but I know I did see photos of it and heard about your recovery.
I need to send you guys footage. I'd love to get your opinion. I feel like this was a really powerful.
So can you set that up so that our listeners know what we're talking about? And then we'll also put a link to that that performance when we publish this.
Yeah. So today is the 19th year anniversary of the Gulf War. So this project was in kind of commemoration. So I've been working on this project for a couple of years. But we kind of tried to schedule it to be on the 20th, but we couldn't because it's a Sunday. So the only date we got on the calendar was the 17th. And I didn't even say anything that day, like during the introduction. I feel like I should have now in retrospect. Anyways, that's a detail.
Well, say it now. Say what you need to say now.
Yeah. So it's called Past and Future Form. It's a container. Past and Future Form is a container for a series of performances, and this specific one is called At the Edge of the Sea, and it's basically engages the past by let me before even going into details, but like so what is Past and Future Form? It's kind of spanning time and space to talk about kind of the intersection of space, war/ foreign policy, oil and the environment, oil/water, the environment, and issues of affect and embodiment, right? So how do they come together in this project? So for example, you know, one of the recitations I do, let me start with saying it's experimental. It's in many ways, you know, not everyone's kind of cup of tea, in the sense that the sound is super experimental. The video, so it's live, so it's me, myself, and then another artist, sound artist called Shola Asghari. She's Iranian, and we're both in the Bay Area at the moment, and we've been collaborating on this project for the last 2 years now. And so she's on one side of the stage, making sound, super experimental. And I'm on one stage and we're both live. So I'm like putting video up and images and text and reading all, you know, all at the same time. Nothing is pre-recorded. I mean, there are certain things that are pre-recorded, like video selection, obviously in advance we're selected, right? But like loading them up, it's all live. Some of the sounds might have been pre-selected, but a lot of sound is being made on the stage. And yeah, it's definitely not, you know, a relaxing experience. The affect is very much about, you know, the embodiment of war and trauma and survival and the relationship between, yeah, racialized necropolitic destruction and the war climate continuum. How do, you know, how do we embody these things not only when we're alive, but when we're dead? So yeah, you know, one of the recitations I do, there's three recitations. One is actually a poem by Induana, who was the high priestess of Inanna or Ishtar in Mesopotamia. That figure was both in the Sumerian mythology as well as the Assyrian mythology, which later became Aphrodite in the West. And it's a poem that she recites about war and destruction and issues of you know, domination, power, and survival, right? And ways of coping and healing. Another poem, excerpts of a poem by Dunya Mikhail, who's an Iraqi Assyrian poet based in Michigan. And the parts of the poem I read is called The Other. And then a piece that I wrote, and I read hers in the only excerpts in Arabic because I have not done full approval and copyrights for her. So I couldn't read the whole thing. So I wanted to say that in case it's misunderstood. And then a piece that I wrote, two pieces I wrote, both to my kids, about these issues. One is a prose poem and the other is a letter, which is part of a larger project that I could talk about later if there's time, called An Archive of Future Memories, a letter to my daughter, but I might change it to kid now. I don't know. I need to come up with a better word than daughter, but we'll think about that later. So yeah, I was reciting these. So you can see how, like, you know, they span, you know, this is why the past and future form. And, you know, you start with Induana, who's this high priestess from like the Bronze Age, probably, you know, 3000 years, talking about similar issues. And then someone like Dunya Mikhail, talking about otherness, and then myself writing prose poet, you know, prose poem about surviving war and, you know, how do I, deal with issues of post memory with my child, and how do I convey these histories and realities, as part of an archive for her to access in the future, because today she'll be probably embodying a lot of these things without knowing why. And I was trying to create some kind of archive where she's able to kind of find maybe cues or answers, right? And the visual, like a lot of the visual is like images. And again, if like you don't know what this is referencing, this is going to be like any, it could be seen as any place. Like if you don't know what these are, the specific references, you think it's any place that is dealing with similar issues. But if you're familiar with some of the architecture and the you know, cartography, the mappings, you notice that a lot of the sites were in Iraq and Kuwait, Kuwait before the Iraqi invasion and Iraq after the U.S. invasion. So you see a lot of images of architecture before war, and then a lot of oil fields burning. And kind of the massive, a lot of them are drone footage from above. So it's like massive oil fields for like miles and miles and miles of just burning fuel, and kind of the environmental kind of, destruction. It's kind of haunting.
And this was a performance you did at this point, where like 2 days away, 2 days from now.
On the 17th. This was Thursday. Yeah, today's Sunday.
How long was the performance?
So ours was an hour, but we were part of, so like I said, our specific piece is called At the Edge of the Sea. It's an hour, but it's a collaboration with someone else. And the whole project was called Past Future Form. And the other one was an hour. Mm-hmm. And it was in San Francisco at Gray Area. It's like a, used to be a called San Francisco Grand Theater or something. It was a very old theater that was renovated by this organization called Gray Art. And it's a beautiful venue, just gorgeous. I mean, you can imagine one of those old theaters that have been just renovated. Mm-hmm. Just stunning, you know.
And so you have there. A link that any of our listeners, if they want to be able to see this performance, which clearly
they won't see it.
There's so many layers that you, that is going into this.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't have the whole footage right now. We haven't, like, we didn't, you know, we taped it as excerpts right now, so I can definitely share excerpts. Eventually, we'll have access to the whole video. But I think one thing that I think I didn't mention in the visual that I think is really interesting for me, at least, because there it's a diptych, so two videos right next to each other. So one is really like showing a lot of the destruction. I'm talking about, like, you know, kind of racialized necropolitics, you know, the destruction of the environment and that the effect it has. But I think the other one has, like I said, very much in conversation with what I was reciting. So you see this figure kind of emerging from the sea and she's moving backwards. She looks like this kind of, this corpse coming out of the sea, like, and it's very haunting. So as she's walking, I'm reciting a lot of this poetry. So it's about how do the, you know, how does the past, how is the past not dead? And how does it, how is the past part of a presence that is really haunting, whether it's being talked about, spoken about, felt, but it's very much present, right? And then the last scene, you see me praying in front of the ocean, and, you know, kind of everything is happening around me. And it's very much like, you know, a very mundane act, but it's so random because people, like, you know, dogs are running around and people are running around. No one is kind of aware or conscious of what's happening. And, you know, I'm being, you know, I'm kind of focused on this ritual practice of healing and meditation and kind of, you know,
when you say prayer, you don't mean like
Muslim prayer, like kneeling. Yes, I do mean that.
Like, God is going to punish me, send me to hell, or
no, not that.
Me. Yeah. Right. But you could see how people might not understand or might assume. So
No, it's very, yeah. So the motions are, you know, kind of an Islamic prayer where you're kneeling and, you know, kind of looks like a yoga practice.
It is. It's just,
it is a yoga practice. I mean, actually the history, if you actually study that history, that's where actually those movements come from. It's actually from yoga practices, right?
Oh, and it's so obvious. Like, so it's funny.
Cause you just feel better when you're done praying, but it's not always just about what you're praying about. It's also the body movement that you're experiencing during prayer.
And the breath. Yeah. It's very much about kind of,
grounding. It's about spirituality. It just created a monotheistic patriarchal version.
but we get to debunk that and reclaim it in our way, right? I mean don't get me wrong, I'm an atheist, but for that reason. I'm very much connected to some of the rituals and practices because of the reasons you're talking about, the reason that, like, we need to reclaim some of that stuff and redefine on our terms, right.
And if that term means throwing the foundation out of the window, that doesn't take away our ritualized practice.
Right.
So one of the points that you discussed about, or the themes that you brought into the performance the other night, is something that you've been playing with for a while. And this is this poem, Letter to My Daughter, or How It Will Be Changed, Letter to My Child, Letter to My Kid, whatever it will become. But you have been, one, I read it and I love, I mean, I was so touched by this concept. Like, I consider myself someone who thinks, I mean, I'm a thinker, but you brought something in there that I hadn't thought about. And I really loved the concept of creating an archive for our children as part of the future, right? Everything that was in the past is in the present, but it's also in the future. And our children don't have the same context we do, but they have the same ancestry, the same lineage, the same histories, whether, you know, whether they know it or not, it's part of who they are. Mm-hmm. And I just really fucking loved the way that you were able to bring that in, but also just hearing that you used it in a performance piece. The piece I read was an academic article. So it's so interesting for me. And then I also heard you give a talk using it. So your ability to move content into these varying spaces and use it differently, I find this such a great talent, and it's such a great way to express the differences and the similarities of these fields, but also how, like you had said earlier, that sometimes there's not enough room in academia, or there's not enough room in art. But I love that piece. So if you could just briefly tell us what that poem was about, this letter to your child, and why you thought that was important, and what you hope to do moving forward with this.
Yeah, this is like needs a session all by itself.
I know everything, guys. What are you kidding? What one of our guests said, fast food, when they were talking about Islam, fast food of Islam. Basically, our podcast is fast food of everything. So we're going to.
No, it's not fast food. No, I don't think it's fast food. No. I don't think.
Well, you can only go so far in depth in this conversation.
No, that's an insult to call it fast food. I'm sorry. I won't allow that. No, right, it's not brief.
We'll call it brief. Listen, I love fast food. There's no shame in fast food.
There's no shame. Yeah, but I don't think.
No, there's a lot of shame. There's a lot of shame, and there's a lot of shame that it's marketed to poor people who now, for the first time in history, poor folks weight of obesity, overweightness coincides with the consumption of fast food. Like for the first
time. Listen, we can debate fast food, but I think it's also pretty elitist for people to say fast food is a problem because
you have some
when you're poor
of control.
And you are not poor, I grew up poor where when we had a treat, we went to fast food. So if people
think
fast food is problematic, I'm saying, but where I come from, that's a big deal.
You need therapy on this issue. It's okay.
100%. But I think sometimes when people talk about certain things as this is problematic and this is this and this, there's a place for that, but there's also a place to say, sometimes you need a fucking McDonald's Happy Meal for your kids and just let them fucking enjoy it. Yes, they'll have diarrhea after. Yes, they're gonna shit their pants. It's okay. We've all done it. And it tastes fucking good, even though it's not real food. Okay. Now let's get back to
I gotta say something. Actually, the opposite of that. I gotta say this something. So the opposite of that is also true because in the Middle East, all right, when McDonald's came, it was actually people who can only have money who would buy it, right?
Because and now they're middle class fat people. I see this as someone who's overweight. Like, you know, like I'm not like.
But all right, so we've derailed the conversation like we do. Can you talk a little bit about your poem?
Yeah, let me actually start by saying this. So it's interesting when I was reading parts of it at the performance on the 17th, some of it was spoken through this long tube that was, you know, that I was holding on the stage, and it went all the way to the audience. And I actually gestured to my kid who was in the audience to go and pick up the tube. Mm. And so they're like, you know, they're on the other side of the, of the theater, holding the tube, and I'm like whispering. I'm not whispering, but it to them, they'll hear it as whispering part of the prose poem. So I just wanted to say that that's how that piece came into the performance as well.
That's fucking heavy. So you included your child into your performance piece about your letter to your future child in the future. Did you plan
that's really
to include
on so
them?
Many dimensions?
Oh my God, I how fucking old? Love it so much more now.
How old is so basically? Is your child now?
6 years old.
Mashallah.
Wow. Basically, I'm on the stage. I'm holding this black long tube, you know, that goes like, you know, from the beginning of the stage all the way to almost the back door, right? And the idea was for people to pick it up and interact, but no one was, right? And I had told Tala in advance that, you know, I'm going to read a prose poem for you. I want you to pick it up and listen. So it wasn't
so
like she was
cool.
Part of the performance.
So fucking cool.
Like it wasn't like it was, you know, it was more like she's part of the audience and it's like a participatory kind of situation here, right? So then no one was. I'm like, Tala, get up, go, go. And then she was like listening and she loved it because she thought the whole thing was so boring. Of course, it's like this crazy experimental sound, right? And
the video is like really sitting in a performance piece for 2 hours. Yes. You're lucky that they sat still.
Yeah. And like, you know, you see oil fields that are burning and, you know, this corpse coming out of the ocean and the sound is like, you know, it's not kid friendly, but for me, actually, yeah. I feel like this is an education, you know, this is more than an education. This is like her like heritage. This is her, like, this is going to be part of her makeup anyway. So I just want to add that, like, there was a performative aspect to the prose poem in the performance that Tyler was part of. Right. So, okay. So the performance 19th anniversary, right? Like 19th commemoration of the war. The piece, An Archive of Future Memories, I wrote the first piece during the 18th anniversary of the war. The first Gulf War and the second Gulf War. So each one a different letter, right? So I've been working on that piece for like 2 years now. And it just got published earlier this year. So we actually the launching of the journal. So it got published in a journal called Critical Refugee Studies, part of the Critical Refugee Collective folks. And yeah, it's on April 18th. I'll send you the link to that.
Okay.
You know, show up. There'll be folks who, there'll be, you know, the editors, obviously. And then there's people who are, you know, published pieces in the journal who'll be reading excerpts of their work. So
and when is this? Cool. When is this going to happen?
I think April, I want to say 8th or 18th.
Okay. And it will be on Zoom. So is that something we can be on
Zoom.
Advertise?
Yeah, it'll be on Zoom. It'll be on Zoom. Okay. So I'll send you the link. And again, it's the journal, Critical Refugee Studies, part of a series
which is such a great field, such an important field.
Yeah. And it's part of a series that comes out of Amerisia Journal, which is the Asian American journal coming out of UCLA, like the quote unquote, you know, Asian American journal. So it's really good peeps, people who are, you know, not only doing stuff in, you know, aren't Asian American and making the link between West Asia and East Asia and South Asia, but people who are also focusing and centering the voices of refugees, right? From like a critical perspective. So it should be really cool. Anyway, so that's where that got published. And like I said, it's a project called An Archive of Future Memory, and it's two letters and a prose poem at the moment, but there are images of an installation I did. There'll be images of our, you know, home in Baghdad. There'll be other images as, you know, it's an ongoing project. So it's like, I hope to continue, you know, adding to it as time goes, by the time, you know, Tyler can actually access them, not in the way like I just access it at a performance, but actually sit down and read it.
I'm hoping. So I have a follow-up question to that.
Yeah.
And it's not something that you and I have talked about, but it's something I just want to see if, you know, there's something brief you can bring into this conversation. In the past, you have, you know, done a lot of video work in Iraq. And I know that this is something you want to continue with 20 years coming up and these big dates and the fact that your work is very centered around that and has been part of this story. What are your plans in terms of going back to Iraq, doing more work there, and how that fits into what you're doing here? Can you speak to any of, even if there's not something set, what your goals and aspirations are for that?
Yeah, I'm definitely trying to go back sometime this year to shoot footage, to get some video footage. And I'd love to be able to take my kid with me and have them be part of the project, actually. Mm. And I don't want it to be like a documentary. I mean, it might end up being, you know, somewhat documentary-ish, but I'm hoping it's not a documentary. It's somewhere between, like, you know, video art kind of I don't want it to be like a straight, you know, either kind of an experimental film or a video art where it's like somewhere between kind of there's like going to be like archival footage, some, you know, real life footage. But then, you know, you have like, it's very poetic in the sense, like I'm thinking of having my kid walk through certain spaces and I'll be in conversation with them. So they're kind of walking through, I should step back and say, so when, when we were deported, I was about Tala's age. I was 6 years old, five, 6 years old. So going back when at the 20th anniversary and you know, of the second Gulf War, and Tala being that age and walking them through that space and having these conversations would be super, super, I think, interesting. You know, it's going to be experimental. So I don't know what, obviously, you know, I'm not just picking up a camera and going, you know, obviously I'm going to be writing some kind of loose script, you know, got to get set up the funding.
And are you going to take a team with
assemble
you?
A team, yeah.
You'll do with you just yourself.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking of assembling a small team, but I also want to hook up with people there, you know, because I think it's important to get people there involved, you know, filmmakers. And
this project where you're planning to go back to Iraq with your child, I mean, any artist knows you have a vision and then in these moments things shift and it happens how it's supposed to happen.
Yeah.
And you have just this loose framework that you're working from and just to, you know, have an idea.
Put them together.
But this idea that you have is so fucking cool because it really speaks to the layers of the work that you do and continues that conversation and continues these, you know, multimedia approaches. So is there anything else that we didn't touch on or more of that project or anything else that you're doing moving forward that you want our listeners to know about that we can plug or anything we missed in terms of talking?
I think probably the only thing I didn't mention, I think that's critical to my work, is I love collaborating and collaborations. I don't look at my art as a solo, just a solo practice. Mm. And I think that, you know, so there's so much in the art world. I think, you know, being a solo artist, showing solo work, like everything's about solo, 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 mm-hmm. solo. I'm like so anti that like whole infrastructure. I find it super problematic.
Yeah.
And I try to work against it, which doesn't obviously, you know, support my, you know, art career in the sense that, you know, the way you are evaluated as an artist is, you know, how many solo works have you had? How many mm-hmm. solo projects have you had? How many da, 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 da. And even like the quality of your art is conceived to be less if you're doing collaborations. Anyways, without derailing into that, like, you know, critiquing the art market.
No, I love that you say that because I feel like I'm the same way with my work because I don't, it's not about my ego. It's about the message and what I'm trying to do with the work. And I think that's what the difference is. It's not, for artists who want to continue solo, 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 it's really about their ego, right? It's not about creating change and creating having some sort of impact with the art. And I think that's where the community aspect of how we even display our work is very different because it's about, it's not just about the self, it's about the message and how that can really make an impact. So I love that.
Yeah. You know, and even the places we choose to show sometimes, you know, mm-hmm. like it might not be, mm-hmm. It's not marketed towards a career per se, you yeah. know.
We're definitely not making money.
Yeah, definitely not. Sometimes we put money into our practice.
Totally,
right?
Totally.
If not, right. We always do that. And that's so I think, you know, for me, I think doing collaborative work and doing collaborative work with people either, you know, that are already part of my community, already my peeps, you know, people mm-hmm. who I love. And I think it's just more fun, to be honest. Yeah. I don't think it's, you know, I mean, yeah, there's like the serious stuff about like, you know, I love their work and I respect their work and I want to build community and I want us to, you know, it's not about me. It's about the process and the project, but it's also just more fun and playful, yeah. you know? So it's always harder, obviously, to get, you know, funding and get the support we want. That's always a struggle, but I feel like it's worth it for me. It's worth it. It makes the project so much more richer. Last collaboration, I'm really happy that I did it with Shola. She's someone I've been working with, an artist I've been working with for 2 years, and she's incredible, you know? I think that's what I want to say, that I think it's important to kind of redefine how we do art and how mm-hmm. we do art practice and the process, you know, to take it out of kind of a solo and talk about it in a relational, whether relational with collaborators or relational with audience or relational with the community. You know, I think that's very critical.
Well, I'm a fan.
Love
you, know,
guys.
I'm a fan. I love your work in all regards.
Big fans here.
Big fans.
I'm a big fan of both of you individually and together in the show.
Anyone who's listening who doesn't know this person we're talking to who's unfamiliar with her work. I think once you start seeing what she's done in the past, what she's continuing to do, you will be a fan. Because it's, again, it's not ego. She's a very authentic person. And that authenticity comes out in the work you do. It's so personal that I feel like a part of you is in that work. And to be in your audience is to be a spectator of your life, in a sense, and or a piece of your life, a moment of your life. And I'm just super excited to see what you do moving forward. I'm super excited about this new project. You already know that. I want to fucking follow you and just take pictures of you and Tala in Iraq, because I just fucking just want to support you.
Real quick, what's your
I just invited myself on Instagram.
We'll post it on our social, but no one really looks at our social. So shout out.
We have 204 followers now.
You don't need to talk specifics. That's a statistic you don't brag about. But anyways, people do listen to us, so
53 do a shout countries. Out. We actually picked up another country since the last episode. So we are at 53 countries. So if you can share with us your ways for people to follow you, we will share everything on all of our
I'm literally media. Trying to get her to just say her handle to pump it up.
Do it.
So Instagram is just my name, Dina Al Adib, D-E-N-A. What is it? Is it just, Dina, and then A-L-A-D-E-E-B all together. Actually, there's no hyphen, right? Dina Al Adib all together.
Okay.
And then my link tree, you can also look me up there. Also Dina Al Adib, same way, no hyphen, just, D-E-N-A-A-L-A-D-E-E-B. Those are
And is this a way for people to follow your work if they want to see what you've done and what you're going to be doing in order to
Actually, I need to update obviously both right now with the new performance because it's not on there, but those are good ways. My email
I definitely feel like you use Insta as a way to communicate to your to followers, and I'm one of the followers who learns about these amazing pieces you do. But yes, do update it.
Can I say to folks listening, Dina's starting a new project. If you know where funding's at for something creative and out of the box like this, please hit her up, hit us up. We'll pass it on to her, because these are projects that are very important that I think mainstream funding doesn't find important, but pockets around the world of community and individuals who have money but don't know where to put it, this is the place to put it. And we need to support each other to get work out that's not mainstream, that tells a message. And we can't forget what happened in Iraq, what's still happening. And her work is a part of that. And so we need to support it, not just by coming to her shows, not just by following her on social media, but money is something that I think a lot of creative folks are always struggling against. So if anyone in the 53 countries that was listening, wants to support her, maybe even let's start a crowdsource of some way so people can send $5, $10, because this is the kind of fucking work that needs to be in the world. There's a ton of sensitivity now. We're coming up on 20 years.
Today is the 20th. Like, today's the 19th.
We're still 19 years, but today's the actual 19th of commemoration. So we as a community need to support our community. And if you're listening to me and Jude, somewhere in your world, you like this shit, right? So check out Dina's work, go to her pages, talk to us, talk to her. Let's get her and her daughter or her child back to Iraq. Let's get this fucking project made, and let's make it this mainstream. That's fucking mainstream this shit, and make it part of the conversation, because we can't just turn around and forget and go to the next war. And that's what we're doing right now. I think talking about Iraq and really looking at these themes and seeing her work is so important for us to think in terms of anti-war and what that really means long term. So sorry for the long plug, but it's just so important that we don't just forget.
I love you both. And I have to say, Masha's always been an incredible supporter. We've had a standing meeting the last month every Thursday, and I've canceled every single time because I was working on this performance and it was occupying every single second. I kept on saying, last minute,
you know, I want to be more available for this. I want to be more available. And every time, you know,
I just needed to invite you on the podcast. That's all.
Yeah, you just needed to do this. Yeah. But no, now that this project is over, I can actually like finally focus on this new project and find ways to work together. You know, we'll make it happen. So thank
you. I would love to work with you in any capacity, either going to Iraq. We've also talked about doing some stuff in Morocco together. So yep. At some point you and I will be collaborating. In the meantime, anyone who's listening, just check out our work. You know, let's keep doing the work ourselves, and let's just be in conversation with each other. Because as Dina has pointed out several times in this interview, it's about community working together. It's about organizing. It's about getting these messages out, and we have the ability to do that, even if it's through the internet.
I love you both. I'm so humbled that you guys are doing this. Thank you. Seriously, like we are, like, I think a lot of us are grateful, even though like, you know, you're still like at kind of the beginning, I guess. Has it been a year yet?
This is our second year. We're in TV.
It's actually been Dina. 2 years.
Oh, wow. It's been 2 years. Damn. You've been going for 2 years. That's impressive.
Pandemic project.
I'm more consistent about this than my paid work, sadly, which isn't saying much.
It says a lot, actually. It says a lot.
Well, we're just so happy that you you came on to the show. I think we need to just keep watching what you're doing and supporting you. So thank you, Dina. And
thank you. Will. Thank you, Aisha. Thank you, Jude.
And that's a wrap.
And yalla bye.